Hi guys, welcome to the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech. I'm your host, Jack Teal, and this is a podcast for accounting tech startup founders focused on no BS, candid conversations about the challenges and benefits of building a startup in the accounting industry. Welcome back, listeners. Looking forward to a bit of a special episode today with Johan, my co-host, obviously. This one is the finale for season two and potentially the finale of the Accounting Tech Tar Pit. There's some question marks, I guess. We don't know what's going to happen next season or if there will be another season. So we wanted to make sure that we fit this episode in. It's been a great couple of seasons and we've really enjoyed the guests we've been talking to. But 2024 brings with it a whole bunch of new challenges and new goals for us both. So let's see what happens there. But for now, let's get cracking on this topic, Johan, of why startups fail. We've obviously both been quite close to this over the last 2 years, especially through the Early Adopters Hub. Before that, we've both had roles at startups, you in particular, many years. So I guess I'm keen to hear it from your perspective first. Why are we doing this episode? What is so important? And I mean, maybe it speaks to the crux of why we even have the Accounting Tech Tar Pit as a podcast. What is, you know, why is it so important to be having this conversation around why startups fail and why are we the right people to be covering it?
Well, I don't know if we're the right people to be covering it. People will tell us by the end of this episode. I think it is an opportunity to kind of like reflect and digest everything we've heard from all the different episodes. We had quite a good diversity of founders and a lot of different opinions. And like you said, I think connecting that with a lot of our experience, a lot of the research that we keep up to date on this, there's a lot that's important to put out there. Now, this is obviously a big topic that a lot of smarter, more successful people than us have covered in many different ways. But I think it is important, first of all, to not just focus on the success, because success is great. Obviously, everybody inspires to that. But a lot of what's out there for early stage founders, especially for like first time founders, there's a lot of fluff, if we're honest. And there's a lot of bullshit out there as well. I think there's always, you notice that distinction between people that are new to the startup space or, you know, have done 1, 2, 3 startups and people that have been around for a while and have worked closely more or less with 10, 15, 20, 30 startups. You start to develop a bit of this cognitive dissonance that like what you're being fed all the time as far as the image and the rule book and the playbook of what you should do to succeed as a startup founder doesn't match the reality. And it's easy to leave off all that inspiring fluff, but when you're down in the trenches and you see the reality up close, it's a lot uglier than what it's perceived. And not having that honest perspective on that and seeing the real difficulties and failures of startups, the good, the bad, and ugly, it just creates a bit of distorted reality of what the journey is like and how it's going to be. And you might get lucky and it's not going to matter and you're going to succeed no matter what. But a lot of founder goes into it with like the eyes not wide open and there's a lot of mistakes and pitfalls that they're just bound to repeat. And I think that's also a big conclusion for us is like we do want to focus on the failure because there's a lot of learnings there. And as I've mentioned, when people are successful, it's hard to really know why they were successful. It's hard to pick the correlation from the causation. And there's the human tendency when you're successful and you look back, you highlight everything that you did amazingly, whether you did or not, and you kind of like hide what other people have done amazingly for you or just being purely lucky on your journey. So it is really important connecting all those dots for founders that are coming into this space to help them get closer to the reality and understand the journey that could be ahead of them.
I think the point around the experienced startup founders or people who have been around the industry is really relevant, because if you don't want to listen to us, that's fine. But, you know, no doubt you go on YouTube or find another podcast with experts. You know, people from YC are a great example. They have so many of those same messages. There's so much of their content is focused around what founders are doing wrong, why they're not getting into YC, and all the common mistakes people make. So, as you know, I think you're 100% right that the more times you've been through this process, the harder you realize it is. And this is me speaking from outside. I'm not going to put my hand up and say I've built 10 startups, and so I'm speaking on behalf of that. I'm just speaking to what I've learned from seeing others, and that's definitely a big one. I guess to why, you know, you should be speaking on this, maybe not me, but, you know, give yourself a bit of credit, Johan, I think, because something that I've noticed about you is you have a very different perspective. You know, I think it's a positive, healthy level of skepticism that you bring to the conversation. I think that's potentially something that you've been brought up with. That's something that's just ingrained in you. It's a very anti-Aussie approach in a way. For some reason, Aussies just love to, you know, ignore that hard stuff and let's not have a hard conversation. Let's just fill you up, build you up, even though we really don't believe in what you're doing. So I think there's absolutely just some personal traits there that fit really well with having this conversation that you bring to the table. But I know there's a lot of passion here too. You know, it's if anyone's listened to this podcast, they probably have heard you mention digging up wounds and talking about failure and a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, is dirty conversation. But it's not out of trying to be negative, I don't think. That's not how I see it. I see you genuinely as someone who's trying to help startups. It's just that no one else is willing to have this conversation with them. I don't know if you see that yourself.
Yeah, I think a lot of it does come from my personal experience. When I first got into the startup space, I guess getting close to 10 years ago, I guess I was naive. I was making the same mistakes. Again, I didn't go as a founder. I went as, like, you know, an employee for, like, really the very beginning of a few startups. But still, you know, I had that dream, like, oh yeah, you're going to get equity in a startup. You're not going to get paid well. You're going to work your ass off. You know, like the first startup that I worked at, I was really like the first employee in the UK setting a thing up. And, you know, I think at the worst of it, I worked 28 days without a break, and on average, like 14, 15 hour days. But it's all worth it because, you know, the equity, and it's going to be huge. And that's part of the grind, and that's what everybody does when they become successful. And then I think with time, I realized that's not necessarily a good way to manage things, and that's not necessarily reality. I guess after a few years in this space, I just maybe got a bit disillusioned that there is a lot of bullshit, that the journey is just not as easy as it, and inspiring as it seems. But back to what I was saying before, once you see up close the journey of quite a lot of startups, you do see there are some patterns, there are some mistakes that are repeatable, there are ways to avoid it, but you have to come into the journey very open-minded, and you need to be very conscious of the advice that you take that's out there. There's endless advice, including ours. And I think it's very important to understand, like, who's giving the advice and why. Like, you know, I would always be very skeptical of trying to simplify something as complex as this, as like the three things you have to follow, the, you know, the five secrets to startup success. Like, automatically, I would just disqualify the reliability of that. You need to know if someone that's, you know, selling this advice is making money out of it. And I think at the end of the day, you also need to look at people. Again, even if people are very successful, like the book that I'm just kind of like trying, I try to read as much as I can for this podcast about why startups fail, that I'll do like a really in-depth analysis that's more academic than just anecdotal. And at the end of the day, even a successful entrepreneurial founder, it's a very small sample size. Like, even if they've done 2, 3, 4, 5 successful businesses, like, that's amazing, and everybody would worship anything they say. But if you look at it a bit more academically or scientifically, that's still a very, very small sample size. And there could be a lot of noise, a lot of confusion, what actually got them to succeed. So I think the first thing you need to do is really be careful of the type of advice that you take. And I think it's going back to our series having done two seasons, and I've listened back to most of the episodes. I think even in our podcast series, it comes across like between different episodes, people contradict each other. And you see people say like, oh, no, definitely don't wait too long until you launch the product and go to market and put into people's hands. And others were like, no, definitely make sure you know what you're doing and understand the market before you launch anything. So I think that's a key part of it. Like, why do people say that? Usually the ones that said you should go faster are the founders we interviewed that are accountants that were a bit more cautious and a bit more risk averse, but actually they knew the pain points, the problem, the competitors, the market very well, because they've been in the industry for a long time. So in their case, they concluded like, actually, we should go to market faster and not be as afraid to put our product into people's hands. Others that said that they've done it too fast often just went into the journey naive. Either they're outsiders or didn't really know the industry and tried to build something too quickly before even understanding what problem they're trying to solve. Or some accountants, they build software based purely based on their own anecdotal experience of their own firm. So I think that's a key thing. There's a lot of advice out there. There's a lot of best practice, a lot of shortcuts, a lot of silver bullets. And I think that's what we're going to try to not do, because the reality is that's maybe, I think, actually I'll pause there, but I think that leads well to kind of like two big mistakes that are important to keep in mind.
Yeah, no, it does. No, thanks for that. I think, yeah, a lot of good things that you've just said, and the nuance and the detail and the context of each startup is obviously going to be relevant. So yeah, as you said, don't listen to this and then all of a sudden assume there's a playbook to walk away with. But it's all just, this is just one piece of the puzzle. I hope anyone listening can take this on board and find some lessons that are relevant to this the point in the journey they're at, applying to the context that they're in. So I guess framing up the rest of the conversation, Johan, before we go into the next, whatever it ends up being, 20, 30 minutes, can you give us a little bit of an overview before we go into the nitty gritty as to why startups fail?
Well, I think, again, it's hard to be original on this topic. So I've thought long and hard how to be original without trying to generalize too much. But I think part of it is actually what you just finished there. Everybody has a different journey, different personal goals, and what works very well for one startup might not work in the context of your industry, your product, your personal goals. But I think if I try to look at maybe a couple of bigger trends that kind of like confide a lot of other problems and mistakes, I think it's just underestimating the complexity of it all. It's very, very complex and it's very, very nuanced. Like the journey ahead, and I think that's the other part. There's just a lot more unknowns than people ever expect. And again, you can't prepare for the unknown, but you need to be ready for it. You need to be ready that you have a certain plan, a certain timeline, a certain budget. You cannot conceive any scenarios of not achieving it. But that's the beauty of unknown unknowns. You don't know what you don't know. And all of a sudden, you know, something happens. Someone quits. Something happens in your personal life. An engineer you trusted was actually really bad at building your product in hindsight. Google launches a feature that makes your product redundant. Like there's so many things in the journey you cannot predict. But you need to be ready for that. You need to be ready for that complexity, and that things are not going to go into plan. And you need to be very adaptable and very resilient and very creative, I think, how you tackle all those different challenges.
Just on that point, I think the Dunning-Kruger effect is something that's really interesting that speaks to that, because I certainly felt it myself. It's like at 23, 24, I was thinking I could go and start a startup. Now I'm so far from thinking I could do that. I'm far wiser, far more mature. I know so much more, have way better connections, yet I'm less confident in my ability. So there's definitely something to the 22-year-old founder and the 45-year-old founder.
Yeah, I think that's the key part of it. I mean, there's, you know, I don't want to say it's all age or it's all experience, because some people at a young age have experienced a lot. Some people that are older have had a very dull, cushy life. So I think it is a combination. But we have seen that difference. Like the older founders, that maybe this is, you know, the first tech startup, but they've run one or two businesses. Again, it's different. But you can always see that is a common theme of the older founders or the more experienced founders. They're more aware of the limitations of their abilities, so they don't try and do it all themselves. And they see the value of putting some money for someone else to do a better job than you. And they take more into account, and they're more ready for those moments where things are not going to go according to plan, and when you're going to get punched in the face and it's not going to feel good. Like there's definitely the older or more experienced founder that has been around for longer and has more battle scars, whether it's life or professionally, they are more resilient, they are more appreciative of what's ahead. And I think it's hard because, again, there's the image. That's always a struggle that I felt personally talking to founders, especially the less experienced ones. It's very hard to fight that image out there. But, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, he was in his early 20s when he went to the biggest VC in Silicon Valley, to Sequoia, and showed up in his pajamas like half an hour late, and basically sold them a different product than Facebook because he didn't want them as investors. So it's hard to combat that, but that's the outliers. That's also one of the biggest mistakes, I think. People look at outliers as an example of what's most likely going to be their journey. And obviously, intrinsically, you cannot look at outliers as the example for the average person. And I think this is where another aspect, like an important, and that's also something we talk about a lot, Jack, is a healthy dose of humility. Like you still want to be confident in what you're trying to achieve despite all the difficulties and all the complexity and unknown unknowns. But you want to have the humility of where your limitations are. And you want to have the humility, like, am I the next Mark Zuckerberg? Do I need to be the next Mark Zuckerberg? Like, not everybody has to be. Like, there's plenty of founders that are going to do very well by building a profitable business, having an exit of 20 million or 50 million. Like, not everything has to be shooting for the stars. And I think this is also goes back to the context of, like, personal goals, what you want to achieve, and being self-aware and genuine with yourself.
I mean, to the point you made about Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, and, you know, I think for me, even that whole story, and at that time in my life when there were a whole bunch of tech startups doing that, that's what made getting into a startup glamorous. Like, everyone was having a great time, wearing t-shirts to work. It was a completely different era, and it was super exciting. But what those handful of outliers did was something that was visionary, you know? And I think a lot of startup founders get caught up in needing to create something that's visionary, that completely changes the world, creates its own new market. You know, it's not just what's the problem and how we're going to solve it and how we're going to make something that's profitable and that can run ongoing. But it seems like that it always has to be this game-changing thing. But I think that's where, as I've learned more about venture capital and how VCs work and what they're trying to do, which maybe speaks to, you know, a reason why a lot of startups fail, actually, is they don't understand what venture capital is for, and they don't understand the bets that these funds are making. And so as a result, they get caught up in this never-ending cycle of raising money and trying to change the world, when there was a much simpler route to building a startup and having a great time while they did it. I mean, I don't know if you can speak. I know plenty of our guests spoke about VC money as a, you know what you're doing before you go down that route. But do you see that as a potential area of failure or mistake?
Yeah, 100%. And this is a conversation a couple of years ago. You'd sound like a madman saying anything against VCs and putting a lot of money into ideas like Clubhouse that I doubt anybody's using anymore. But yeah, 100%. I mean, I think as a startup, you need to understand the model of VCs, and that is the power law. It is a model that by design produces a lot of failure. Like, I think you have to remember that. If you're taking VC money, the only way for a VC to succeed is for you to be an outsized return that is a fund returner that makes all the zeros and all the 1x, like they don't matter. And I think that's something that, you know, it's been glamorized for a long time and still is, to get that post you can put on LinkedIn with TechCrunch or whatever, of the two founders sitting on the sofa, smiling with their t-shirt, you know, being proud they got some top VCs putting money into their company. And I think it got distorted again. The market is a bit more sane now, but it just got distorted that people forgot the history of VC was to help fund big projects. It started with hardware and then it moved to software and internet and cloud. But it was a model to fund the innovation that's going to be hard to get off the ground as a normal business, as a normal SME. But it got distorted with time that it is just like basically building a portfolio of startup, putting a lot of pressure on all of them to become that unicorn, and everybody else doesn't matter. So I mean, obviously there's VCs that do an amazing job. There's like some top names like Sequoia that have been consistent for like 40 years, I think, and that doesn't happen just with luck. But the vast majority of VCs don't make money and often don't even beat the market. So I think as a startup, it's something you definitely need to have a consideration. It's not as glamorous as it seems. And it's not a measure of success. You know, it depends on which country you're in, but most VCs are investment bankers, management consultants. They've never worked in a startup and they don't really understand the mechanics of how it works. They just make a lot of gut feeling decisions on who to invest and who not, and that often backfires. But as long as the power law is driving the investment strategy, it doesn't matter as long as they get that one lucky one. So I think it is very crucial to remember that, and in the context of our industry of accounting tech, it's even more relevant, because like, yeah, there's a decent market for most products, but it's not consumer that's global. It's not enterprise. Like, there is a more limited market. So as an accounting tech startup, to take on VC money to become that unicorn is often just going to lead you to failure.
And so I suppose then if we take the two kind of lessons you've shared, the understanding the complexity, or not underestimating the complexity, making sure that you've, you know, if you are raising money, that you're raising it from the right sources and that it makes sense for the model, the business that you're trying to create. If you're a founder and you're out there and you're like, yep, okay, cool, understand the complexity, you know, I'm aware that I have unknown unknowns, I'm raising money from the right sources, well, then what are the other reasons why they might fail?
Well, I think another important lesson is you need to be able... You need the ability to basically hold together very contradicting things. It's really holding contradictions, like we're gonna probably talk about in the end. You need to be very optimistic, but also very realistic at the same time. You need to be very ambitious and visionary, but also kind of like know where the most logical starting point is. You need to move fast when that's the right thing and opportunities come up, but you need to think very strategically and slowly when it's something that has a bigger impact long term. So you need that ability to really contain those contradictions, which is quite hard. And I think at the end of the day, like the last episode we just did with John Jenkins, with that postmortem, you see that quite well, because he said the lesson from his version one of hindsight was he needed to sell his practice because it distracted him when he did version one. He needed to go all in. Then version two, one of his takeaways was like, actually, that was a mistake to sell my practice because I didn't have enough cash and then I needed to rely on raising money and I wasn't good at it. So even in one founder's journey, you can have those contradictions. And again, this is why there's not one size fits all, and you need to try and think what's the right thing for your context, and you need... And I think another key thing is you're basically just juggling all the time, like double-edged swords. It's just a lot of double-edged sword that in one context, a little bit of it is not enough. Too much of it is going to destroy you. You're like, you need to find the right balance on so many double-edged sword that are dangling in the air. And this is also goes back to all that advice out there. You know, in some contexts, like it's golden advice. In other contexts, it's actually detrimental. So I think this is, again, it's not the usual silver bullet and simple answers that people want, but that's just the reality that you need to take into account.
Yeah, I think this is going in the right direction. It's really interesting conversation. And something else that I know we've spoken about quite a lot is that often startup founders will run into, you know, one or many of these mistakes. They'll make them. You know, I think that's pretty standard. You know, most people will have something that they do that is a little bit of a pitfall. But you see that oftentimes the journey of any successful startup has been a series of pivots, you know, a series of changes in direction, and eventually they get there. You know, these little changes that move them towards the right thing. So there's definitely an element of you're going to make mistakes. It's about making sure those mistakes don't fail your startup completely, because there's, unless you're building a solution looking for a problem and you're really nowhere near product market fit, you know, assuming you're kind of in the direction of something that's going to add value, then it's more about making sure that you recover from these. You don't have too many of them, because, you know, you can run out of time, you can run out of runway, but you can also run, you see founders run out of the energy. You know, I think for John, there was an element of money that he said, you know, if I had more money, I'd keep going. So maybe it wasn't an energy thing for him, but I think for plenty of other founders, it's like, you know, even if I could raise more right now, I'm just tired. So that ends up being the failure point. It's not actually that there weren't more little opportunities to pivot or adjust or move forward. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with this, like, kind of, yeah, I guess that challenge?
Well, I think that's a big takeaway that I've had from, especially recently, and especially with this recent tech downturn, when it did just push a lot of startups into failure, and several startups that we've worked with and have been part of their journey, whether for just a few weeks or, like in John's case, for a couple of years. And I do think those iterations, those pivots are quite fundamental. It's unavoidable. And again, this is where you do hear a lot of the top VCs in Silicon Valley. They say that, they accept that, and they understand it's part of the journey. But there's a limit. I think every iteration, every pivot, it takes its toll. It uses up resources. There's an opportunity cost there. You go down one path for 3 months, 6 months, it means you haven't explored another path that could have been more viable. There's relationships with your users, especially in B2B, especially in accounting, where word of mouth early on is like vital to succeed. Like, you're going to burn bridges. And we see it all the time. I hear it all the time, by the way, sessions that we do and on our accountant Slack community. I talked to this startup like 3 years ago. They did a bad job with their pitch, or I thought their product was crap, and I've never looked at it again. So, you know, if you're B2C and there's billions of consumers, it's not as much of a problem. But if you're in B2B, in accounting tech in the UK, targeting the innovators and early adopters, then that is quite crucial. But anyway, back to the point. So I think all those pivots and iterations, that, you know, that there is that trust then with the users that you're potentially burning, with investors. If you got investors on board, you made some promises, you had a certain sell, a certain vision. Every time you pivot and you take longer to get there, that erodes that relationship. But I think the most important thing is the founder drive and energy and momentum. Like, it seems like an inexhaustible resource when founders are at the beginning of the journey. And quite often we speak to founders at the beginning of the journey when again, they have that image, they're going to persevere and they're driven and they believe in what we're doing and nothing's going to stop them. But they get punched in the face again and again and again. And, you know, after 2-3 years, some people realize actually, well, some after 3 months and some after 5 years, it depends how much you want to be punched and what was your motivation to even start that journey. But that's the sad part. Like, all those pivots, all those iterations take a while. And I've noticed some startups, after 2-3 years of pivoting, they're finally in the right place. I think it all depends on your starting point, how off you were to begin with, how robust your initial market research was, hearing what you want to hear rather than what you need to hear. How quickly did you go building a product before you understood the market and the problem? But eventually some startups do get there, but it's almost getting there after too long is just as bad as never getting there. Like if you run out of money, you run out of energy, you run out of resources, it doesn't matter if you finally got product market fit and you got it right, like you're going to fail nonetheless. And I think that's one of the saddest ways to die, when you did get it, but you just took too long to get there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, I mean, with the time left, Johan, is there any other particular reason why startups fail that you want to kind of bring to light? I've also got up my sleeve, kind of having gone back over each of our episodes, the tar pit mistakes that every single founder addressed to us or brought up to us, that I think is worth going over almost just quite quickly as kind of the lower level reasons or mistakes that can lead startups into failure. I think the conversation we're having so far is quite, you know, these are quite big ticket items. You know, underestimating the complexity of startups is a huge area compared to, you know, a small action that someone might take that could lead them down the wrong path. So before getting into that nitty gritty, is there anything else that you wanted to say around this topic?
Well, I think actually I did an interesting exercise this morning where we've built a bit of that founder matrix, because we've worked with like more than 35 startups quite closely, evaluated in one shape or form, I think about 200 now. So we decided to put that all into matrix and different qualities that we kind of like identify are important, which very importantly are very different than like the way a VC would look at it, like being very confident for us is a red flag. For a VC, they love hearing that. And I think there's definitely some patterns, and out of that, I'm also building a new assessment tool of how we assess founders for 2024. But I think something that jumps out at me is like, yeah, there's some combinations that just don't make sense. Like if you're an outsider to the industry, you've got a huge ego, you're not open-minded, and you're a bad listener, your chances of success are very, very low. So there are things that jump out, but there's always those exceptions. Like, you know, you could be a complete insider and not very experienced, but very humble about it and very open-minded, great listening skills. Like there's always different variables in a different context. And then ultimately, again, I don't have 10 years, 15 years of data yet. So one day I'll get there, but there's luck, like there's randomness like involved. Like you can do everything right and still fail, and you can do everything wrong and still succeed. And I think, you know, that's something to remember. So again, there are like nitty gritty mistakes and pitfalls that people make at different stages of the journey. And I'd highly recommend reading the book, Why Startups Fail. I think in the UK it's called something else. And that's quite a robust research into all those different reasons at different stages. And we've encountered them from my experience quite a lot. But at the end of the day, I think that's, for me, the key takeaway is it's complicated, and you need to take that into account, and you need to be ready for that, and you need to be adaptable, you need to be flexible. And the only real way to get over your biases and wanting to hear what you want to hear, you need some external perspective. Like you need advisors, people you pay or people you don't pay, or you give them equity, but someone that shares the same goal as you to see you succeed, that's going to challenge you and going to bring a different perspective. That's the only way that you can highlight those blind spots where you might be making mistakes and you don't even realize it. Because quite often it's not one huge decision that you make that like unravels everything. I think when we talked to John, there were a couple of main events, but at the end of the day, it's usually a series of a lot of small decision and small things that just add up to take you down the wrong path. And if you don't have any safety net, anybody putting up a mirror and holding you accountable to what you're doing, then you know you're not going to succeed. But at the end of the day, the founder needs to be the one making the decision. He just needs to surround himself with the right people that can bring that external, independent perspective.
Yeah, no, perfect. So thanks, Johan, and obviously it's been a very deep and interesting conversation to be having. as a bit of a way to wrap up, I do just want to touch base and obviously to the point you made earlier, which is there is no five steps to avoid failure that you can take away from this. You know, the key thing is that there's so much complexity in this, and there are frameworks and there are tools and there are lessons to be learned, but it's going to come down to how well you as an individual founder can absorb that information and apply it to your specific context, which is why having an external person can help. Another perspective is obviously going to be important. So in terms of what the founders have said to us in each of these episodes, I just wanted to call out some of those key mistakes that can lead into failure, so that everyone listening, you know, has that kind of single source of truth to walk away from. So one is the silver bullet that, you know, you're never one feature away. I think a lot of founders get caught in this, if we just build this or we just build that, it's going to suddenly unlock product market fit for us. I think there is a point where suddenly the scales tip in your favor and you suddenly are solving enough problems or adding enough value to enough people that you can kind of confidently say you're at product market fit, but it's a lot more nuanced than just, oh, one more feature and this is going to unlock a market if you currently have no interest whatsoever. The second big one is building a visionary product. We kind of spoke about that as well. You know, the builder and they will come. You know, no one's ever done this before. This is a complete game changer because nobody's asking for it. It probably means nobody's dealing with this problem and nobody is trying to solve this problem right now. So just be aware of the risk that you're taking if you go down that route. Once again, there's nuance to this. There are situations where you are going to build something and hope that people come to it. Probably a situation where you're going to need VC money. You're going to be educating an entire market. So it's a much more difficult journey to go down, but you know, in some situations it has to happen. Another really good one, this was from Guy from Ignition, was you know, sometimes don't believe stated intention. If you're relying completely on the word of a customer that says, look, I'll sign up when you do this, prioritize your roadmap based on what, you know, your strategy is. You know, you believe this is going to unlock the market, not because this one person did. They have no obligation to actually sign up once you've built that. So, you know, don't hold it against them. Be smart about what you're building because your time resources are limited. I think another one is that solving problems isn't enough. You know, you have to assess how big this problem is, how frequent it's occurring, how big the user base is for that. That doesn't mean, another mistake that was mentioned is going after the biggest market you can. You know, yes, a big, nice TAM is juicy on your pitch deck, but other than that, it's a bit pointless. You actually want a really small niche market that you can target extremely well from the beginning. In terms of having that target market, another point that came up from Alistair at Flinder was, you know, if you want to target accountants, you can't just have one persona, which is an accountant. So many personas within the industry, so many different kinds of firms, so much variety and depth there that if you think your current customer is an accountant, you haven't understood the market well enough. I think that There's plenty, and if you haven't listened to the other episodes, towards the end of each episode, we ask them that question, and it's just some absolute gold just in that little bit. So, you know, hopefully there's something a little bit low level, a little bit more detailed that you can take away as well, along with the bigger, broader why startups fail picture. So, Johan, I'll leave it over to you to wrap it up, and thanks very much for the conversation. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jack. And yeah, just to wrap up, I mean, at the end of the day, everything that we do and everything we believe in, and this whole series and this episode about why startups fail, it's all because we want to see startups succeed. That's why. Like, it's not easy going into startup space and launching your... It's hard to be a business owner in general. It's even harder in the whole tech space. But you can do great things. Like, it can have a big impact, and I'm passionate about it. I'm passionate about the positive impact that it has. I do think the world needs more entrepreneurs to try. Well, I hate to use the cliche. I hate cliches, but to try and make the world a better place rather than become investment bankers that try to extract value where they can to get themselves rich. I think that the balance is off there, and you want to see more people going into it, and you want to see more people succeed. So I think that's just kind of like my final word is try to educate yourself, try to get different perspective, try to understand where people are coming from, try to read the right books, try to kind of like absorb the different frameworks out there that are going to help you avoid some mistakes and give you a bit of a North Star. But at the end of the day, always remember like why you're in that journey, why did you start it, and where you want to get to.
Yeah. Good luck on the journey, everyone. Thanks for listening. Thank you once again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are a potential founder in your early stages of developing a product or elsewhere in the journey struggling to achieve product market fit, we would love for you to reach out at www.earlyadoptershub.com. This has been another episode of the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech.